Welcome to Canada Conversations, part of Delaware Debates 2018, produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. I'm Delaware Public Media News Director Tom Byrne. This conversation, taped at Delaware Public Media's studios on the campus of Delaware State University, focuses on the race for U.S. Senate, and we are joined by Republican Gene Truono. How you doing?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you coming in. We start off asking everyone basically the same basic question, which is, why did you decide to run for U.S. Senate?
I have long thought about running for the U.S. Senate back in the day when I started my first real job, I say, at Wilmington Trust Company. At the time, I had to implement the savings and loan bailout bill. And when I read the bill, I thought, this is created by bureaucrats in Washington that really don't understand how financial services work. And I jokingly said, just give me 2 years in Washington and I can fix all these problems. But it was really the background there that made me think a lot about public service in a way that could really help people and help the consumers in particular. It seems when Congress passes these large, complex bills to fix a problem that sometimes they created, it hurts the consumer instead of helping them. And so throughout my career, I thought about this would be a great way to give back. And so fast forward 30 years in my last job after I retired and being primarily in regulatory compliance, I thought, what a great way to give back is to run for the U.S. Senate in the state of Delaware, a state that is very, I think, steep in financial services, and look forward to helping bring new changes and ideas in the regulatory environment, specifically in financial services, but not to reduce the level of supervision over our financial institutions. There's a real big difference.
You touched on your background a little bit in that first answer. What should voters know about your qualifications and background for the job, perhaps that they may not already know?
I think I've had a very lucky and blessed life, a very unique career. I spent 30 years in financial services, started at Wilmington Trust, and then I ran the compliance program and the community reinvestment program for the Associates National Bank, which was a credit card issuer in the 90s. So I served on a number of nonprofit boards that helped low to moderate income people get into houses, get into education, and also keep elderly and senior people in their homes. And I learned back then that big government programs aren't the solution to the problem, that actually solving problems at the local level through nonprofits and faith-based organizations really are the better way to deliver services on the local level. And after I went from Associates National Bank, I moved to Chase, and then they transferred me to New York to build their global foreign correspondent banking compliance program, which I implemented the USA Patriot Act. And it was there that I really learned a lot about global sanctions and how that works, which is obviously very relevant today mm-hmm. in our foreign policy issues, which I think uniquely qualifies me for this role, even compared to our senior senator who may not have had that external private sector experience. And after I left J.P. Morgan, I went to American Express and did a lot of the same things and then ended up at PayPal. I was the global head of anti-money laundering compliance and then their chief compliance officer. I had a staff of about 120 people all around the world and negotiated with the U.S. government, but also the Singaporean, Canadian, and Australian governments about regulatory compliance. I served on a committee in the Treasury Department in the U.S. Related to regulatory reform and also served on a number of committees around the world on advising and counseling about financial technology, artificial intelligence, and the blockchain, which I think is the future of jobs here in Delaware.
All right. I want to move into some issue questions. And first, you know, more than a few pundits or analysts have framed this midterm election as a referendum on President Trump. Do you agree? Why or why not?
I think it's partially due to that. I think the way I like to look at it is we're seeing a great improvement in the economy because of tax reform. Our senior senator didn't vote for that tax reform. His opponent wouldn't vote for tax reform, probably vote for tax increases. And so I think if we look at the policies of this administration, I always say let's have an honest conversation about what's right and what's wrong and let's solve problems to help people. But I think from a domestic perspective, the domestic policies the administration has put forth are really seeing a stronger economy with a 4.1 GDP growth in the second quarter, the stock market doing very well in the long term, is not as opposed to looking at short-term gains or losses. But I also think that we can continue to do better. We can make the tax cuts permanent for the middle class. The Democrats have argued that, the Republicans passed this tax bill and they're not permanent. It doesn't help the middle class. Well, they know full well the reason why they're not permanent is because this bill was passed with only Republican votes on reconciliation, and we need 60 votes to change the way the tax structure is implemented. And I think we can get that if we have people who go to Washington that want to support the policies that help the people. Take the man out of the argument if you don't like the president. Tell me what part of the policy, either domestic or foreign, that you don't like. And so let's stop talking about clicks and news bite talking points that really don't help solve the problem.
I do want to touch on the Mueller investigation and questions about Russian interference into the 2016 election and elections going forward. That issue has also kind of hovered over these midterms. To what degree are you concerned about this type of interference in this election cycle? And if elected, what would you support doing to secure future elections?
Sure. So I think clearly there's been intervention in elections, not just in this last one in 2016. And it has been Russians. It's been the Chinese, the Israelis. Other countries have often looked to our electoral process in a democratic society. And we look at theirs, too. Let's just be honest. I think the meddling and intervention is inappropriate, and we need to do everything we can to stop it. There is some level of insurance. I believe the Director of Homeland Security is going on the air today to talk about some of the preventive measures they've done. My understanding for Delaware is that most of our voting machines are simply like adding machines, so there's not ability for them to be hacked. But we should look at that, but we should also look at way technology can protect and safeguard that data, just like we would want to do the safeguards for any types of personal data that we don't want hacked by outside would-be bad actors. And again, I think we need to be concerned about the Russians, but there are also a lot of other players in the political arena we should be concerned about as well.
A Pew Research Center poll earlier this summer found immigration to be the top concern among voters heading into the midterms. This issue obviously touches on a number of topics, from the status of the DACA program, separation of families at the border, funding of President Trump's border wall, which the president has threatened the government shutdown over. Given all that, if elected, what approach toward immigration would you seek to pursue in Congress?
So I believe that the legal immigration system is broken as well as the problems that we have with illegal immigration. There is proposed legislation by Senators Cotton and Perdue. It's called the RAISE Act, which would help fix the legal immigration process and also close some of the loopholes in the illegal immigration process. I support that act, and I encourage people to look at it. I think it's still at a formative stage, so there's time to really come together and solve that problem. I believe in the wall, and I know people don't agree with me. Some people think it's foolish, but I agree with it for a whole lot of reasons, not the least of which is to keep illegal immigrants out of this country. There are two other major problems, and I've talked about this during the campaign trail, and I think the flow of illegal fentanyl across the border, which is actually the main cause of people dying of overdoses who are addicted to opioids and heroin in this country, needs to be stopped. And building a wall and securing our borders will help stop that. The other thing, and I've been actually tracking this for probably 25 years now. When I was at Wilmington Trust, the federal government came to us, as they did to all banks, and we were supposed to be tracking the flow of funds from Mexico and Latin America that led to human trafficking and child prostitution. And I say to people, if you're concerned about those two issues alone, it really makes a lot of sense that we secure our southern border, because that's what's the cause, the allow of the free flow of illegal immigrants, and not just the immigrants themselves, but the would-be coyotes and others who have caused a lot of the problems we see that impact society, not just those two issues, but all the crime that's associated with it. So I think it's something that we should look at very seriously. We do need to fix the immigration system in this country, along with securing our borders.
Healthcare was also high up on the list of voter concerns. Arguments in a Texas case that would strike down the Affordable Care Act as unconstitutional will be heard this fall. If that suit succeeds, though, it would also eliminate some of the popular provisions of the ACA-like protections for people with pre-existing conditions. With that case as kind of the backdrop, what do you see as the appropriate path forward when it comes to addressing health care in this country?
So I've been very clear on this. I do not believe in universal health care or Medicare for all. I don't think it's sustainable. I think the cost is an impossible level to reach. Some of the estimates would be about $33 or $34 trillion over 10 years to pay for it. We're already $22 trillion in debt, and I don't think we want to add more debt. I don't firmly understand why we want the government to take over 65% of our health care that's already provided by our employers. That's what Obamacare originally was established to do. It made no sense to me at all. Why would we allow the government to mandate three types of health care coverage for everyone in this country and apply that to a system that's working pretty effectively? J.P. Morgan Berkshire Hathaway and Amazon are working together to pool their resources to bring down the cost of private insurance for employees as well as for the employers. That's the kind of model we should focus on. I think the other two aspects, the way I look at healthcare, it's not one big easy solution. We have Medicare and we have Medicaid. We need to fix the fraud, waste, and abuse in those programs. And then we need to look at the smaller percentage of the people who don't have insurance, those in the individual market, and those people who get insurance from or would create insurance for small business employees. As you know, most of our two-thirds of our employees or jobs are created by small businesses, so we should give the same kinds of advantages to small business to create affordable health care for their employees. We should also look at allowing for the sale of insurance across state line, allowing for consortiums across the country of small business owners like realtors or stonemason or any type of group that actually is a collective group, sort of on the same philosophy of a credit union, to allow for the pooling of resources to reduce the cost. And one last thing that's been talked a lot about, but we haven't seen it, is price transparency, which I think will lead to greater competition and a reduction in the cost of not only healthcare, but for pharmaceuticals as well.
I also want to hit on trade and specifically President Trump's use of tariffs, which have had somewhat of a negative impact here locally on soybean and corn farmers. What is your assessment of this use of tariffs, not just economically, but also within the realm of foreign policy as well?
Sure. So I think the overall goal is to have free and fair trade. And I think some of the trade deals, I would agree with the president, have been more one-sided and not fair to the American worker or the American people. And so while he took a very demonstrative approach to this, we are seeing some positive results. He's agreed with the European Union to strive for a goal to reduce tariffs to zero or have parity. We're working with the Mexicans on NAFTA, and there's supposedly good news coming out. We're hearing early reports of that. I think the next approach is they've already started negotiations with Japan. And then Canada, there's some talks in the work, although there seems to be some muddying the water there. But all in all, if we get that kind of a strategy implemented, then we're left with China, which is our biggest trading partner. And I think China wants to come to an agreement as much as we do to make it fairer, because they deliver half of their goods to this country. And if we were to have some short-term pain by having tariffs that bring them to the negotiation table, I think it's a good strategy. We'll see. I'll be cautiously optimistic to see if it works, but I have some faith and confidence in the fact that what we're seeing already will lead to a better and more fair trade around the world and help American workers.
Generally speaking, how do you rate the health of the U.S. economy? And if elected, what would your priorities be to make it stronger?
I think we're seeing some very positive results with the second quarter 4.1 GDP growth, which is something that we were told even 2 years ago was unheard of, that we would have to accept 2% as a new normal, obviously is not what has happened. I think the policies of this administration that have allowed for tax cuts to stir the economy will only be strengthened, and I would support tax reform too, which would strive to make all the tax cuts, the personal tax cuts, permanent. It'll also give advantages to small business owners to accelerate depreciation to help grow their businesses. And as I said earlier in the interview, I think the fact that small businesses create two-thirds of the jobs in this country will only continue to strengthen our economy and really make the folks in Delaware move above to the level that we are. We're a little bit lagging behind the national average on a lot of these numbers, but I think that combined with the ability for us to bring good-paying jobs back through the use of financial technology charters that the Treasury Department is talking about will help strengthen Delaware's economy and help the people of the state of Delaware.
And finally, we ask everyone, is there an issue you feel isn't getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle?
I think the one that troubles me the most, and it's not one that comes first to mind to people, is our national debt. And we don't talk a lot about it. We continue to spend more money. And it's always easy to spend money. I guess when you're in Congress, it's not easy to cut. But we really need to have a long-term plan and a long-term goal of how we're going to solve the national debt problem. We can't allow it to continue to escalate, because we will leave a burden for the next generation that will be probably unsustainable and not able to be fixed. So I think it's one of the things we need to focus on. It's one of the areas that I have spent some time in my private sector on, is budgeting and finance. And so I think there's an area that I can help and work with other senators and congressmen that really want to tackle this problem and help future generations of Americans.
Gene Chirono, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, we thank you for your time.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You can find all of our candidate conversations online at DelawarePublic.org and DelawareDebates.org. This candidate conversation was taped at the Delaware Public Media Studios on the campus of Delaware State University and is part of the Delaware Debates 2018 program produced by Delaware Public Media in collaboration with the University of Delaware's Center for Political Communication. Thanks for listening.